All right, so I'm sitting here in London, in beautiful London, beautiful Christie's, the internationally acclaimed art house, with Sophia Miliszewska, and we're going to talk to today part of her own transformational career changing journey. So, today, what's the date today?
The 26th of November
in London.
Nice. Yeah.
And do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 28.
28, so coming up to another decade shortly, so nice and young still. Now, you recently made a career change, so can you tell us a little bit about what job you find? And also what country?
Okay, so I was living in New Zealand, and where I was born and raised, and was working for the Department of Statistics New Zealand as a statistical analyst, where I worked for 2 years, and then 2.5 years ago now I packed up and moved to London and am now working for Christie's, the auction house.
Completely different, because that's statistics, what we're dealing with day in and day out.
Day in and day out, I was dealing with a lot of surveys, I was working specifically on the labour cost index, so it was sort of very economics based, and it was number crunching, number crunching and analysis and interpretation of the data we were collecting.
Yeah. How do you feel? What do you notice in your sort of body barometer when you're talking about that work?
I don't mind talking about it. I'm quite proud of work I did there, I learned a lot, and I think, in the 2 years I was there, I got a lot better at what I was doing there, and having had a background in maths and and that field, I was comfortable with that, so that was, it worked to the skills that I had.
But then tell me, we've just been out and what did we look at? A Rembrandt, right up close, no barriers, no alarms, nothing. We just went and looked at this huge Rembrandt, and what is the indicated price on that?
£18 to £25 million.
So, but different from, the statistical research that you were doing prior. And how do you feel when you're sort of up close and personal to these artworks?
Really good. I love the fact that, in any given day I can walk through a room and be that close to a Rembrandt painting or Damien Hirst on 1 week or... there's so many different things, and it's amazing, and we had a sale this week where we sold some, pop memorabilia, film memorabilia, a maquette from the original King Kong movie from the 1930s. And you can get up close and personal with things like that.
Or Marie Antoinette's jewellery.
And first edition Charles Darwin book, there's so many different things, and it's really cool to sort of be able to experience that, and being someone who also has a passion and interest for that side of things, it's really great to work in a place where I can see that on a day-to-day basis.
That's what I wanted to go back. So going back to that time in New Zealand, what was the main catalyst for change? Why did you suddenly, pick up your suitcase and get back to schools and hike your way halfway around the world?
Well, I always wanted to travel and see a bit more of the world, and it made logical sense to base myself somewhere and then do the travelling I wanted to do somewhere closer to where all those places were, because New Zealand is so far away. So I guess that typical OE mentality. It sort of like all came about, I kept putting it off year after year. I was like, this is happening and that's happening, and maybe later. And
then you're not your traditional OE sort of age. You keep putting it off, the other things keep cropping up.
And I didn't want to leave this, and I didn't want to leave that, and my family, this and that. And in the end, a few other people I knew were all sort of heading over at similar times, and my job had kind of reached a point where I was sort of ready to make the next move, either within the company or outside of it.
Yeah.
And I Yeah, it just, I don't know, it just all sort of fell into place when someone else I knew was going, and I just sort of decided to be brave and book some tickets and go.
Yeah.
And
just like that.
Just like that, pretty much it was.
Yeah.
I had other friends who were even more sudden than that, like stole my thunder, I'm pretty sure, when they said, oh, I'm going as well now, but I booked my tickets for a month before you leave, and because I don't need to deal with any visa issues because I have a European passport, I'm just going. And it's like, what?
So
I had so much more planning to do.
So it kind of kept the interest going because it would be easy. Once you paid for your ticket, it was a...
So I had a date in mind, you know, there was all the processes of trying to sort out my visa and things like that so that I could work here. And I don't know, I actually think it was better having come now later for me, because I'm not the kind of person, if I'm honest, who would have enjoyed doing that 18-year-old, you know, working in pubs and cafes and whatever. That's just not really me.
Yeah.
And coming over here beforehand, I was really determined that even if it wasn't going to be my dream job, that I would get a proper professional job, you know, rather than those sorts of cafe type here and there sort of jobs.
So you were doing quite a bit of research before you came. You were saying, going back to the things that you're passionate about, what are the things that you're really keen on?
Oh, I love art, and it gives all those sort of culture things.
Right.
Art, dance, music.
So hence London, was it?
London, it was, London made sense, well, the UK made sense because I speak English and I could get a visa to be here. London specifically because it does have a big cultural hub, but it's got a lot of cultural organisations, and it's just big, so there's more opportunity.
Right, yeah.
As I saw it anyway,
And so you were busy on some of the, you went through some of the things you were doing before you came to try and get a job?
Okay, before I came, I was doing lots of research into what those places were. I was looking at the sort of the job websites and seeing what kind of companies were coming up, what organisations were coming up, and also just from my own knowledge of what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like going onto the Christie's website or the Sotheby's website or the National Gallery or the Victoria and Albert Museum, looking at all their websites for their job sections.
Mm-hmm.
And I also spent some time with my former lecturers, my art history lecturers, who I knew had spent time overseas as well, and sort of drew on their knowledge of and got some suggestions from them. One of my lecturers, he, being very practical, handed me a year's worth of art newspapers, which is a publication that they have, and it focuses mostly on London and the US.
Right.
He handed me a whole lot of those and said, here, background research, so that you're up to the play with the contemporary art scene over there.
And I think it helped when it came to
getting it. I thought it did, actually, because I was a lot more familiar with a lot of things, but also it was a really good newspaper because it also had lots of advertising for a lot of these arts organisations, and a lot of, it even had some job vacancy ads in it, so I had it even more of a list of places to be contacting or checking or looking at.
A lot of Kiwis, I suppose, would be looking at just conventions like Speak or Monster or...
Yeah.
And you're just not going to, if you were saying it's probably hardly likely you're going to find a job in that way. Yeah.
Well, I did sign up on Monster, but I really struggled with it because they, for me, I think the biggest issue was I've never really been able to define what it is that I do.
Right.
Your occupation or I'm not a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer or an architect. This is the thing, right? My current job is client information coordinator.
Right. You don't see those on Monster.
No, exactly. I've had a few here. The job I was doing for the last 9 months before I started this new role was I was a data analyst in our strategy department, for the strategic analysis.
Yeah.
And before that, I was a viewing assistant, front of house assistant, so I was more in the throes of the client facing side of things. It was
customer service. I was, that job had a lot of variety for me. I was on the front desk, I was in the sale rooms, I was helping on our valuations counter.
Right.
And I was also doing telephone bidding during auctions for clients. So there were lots of different things to do there. And
I doubt Christie's would post a job on Speak, you know. But so you're saying the newspapers, local newspapers, the London newspapers and the art scene. So you stuck close to your interests and your passions and just started to sort of look at all the avenues where those types of people would be congregating, where work might be available.
Yeah, I did. That was what I did back home.
Mm-hmm.
I also found it really, actually really interesting that a lot of, and it's been my experience, but also I've noticed the experience of a lot of my friends here, that there's a lot of pigeonholing that goes on. Like, they really cling. I felt it was quite challenging compared to New Zealand, where I felt that people were a bit more interested in your skill set rather than what job you did last. Whereas here, there were lots of jobs that I applied for, or lots of people that I talk to who would look at my CV and see that my last job was statistical analyst, and they'd say, we don't deal with statistical analysts, but that's not what I am, that's just the last job that I did. And, you know, and I've just spent, you know, you've just read the cover letter where I've told you all about the other experience I've had, or my interests, or what I can do.
Right.
And, you know, Statistics New Zealand gave me all these other skills that I can use and put to use, but that's not what I am.
So tell me, Sophia, when you say people said that, tell me what you are. What would you say? You know, you say that's not what I am.
Well, I think in some ways I probably am an analyst in some sort of way, you know. As I say, I was working in an area where I was doing data analysis here. And my current role involves some level of analysis. But see, I still don't know, and this is what I struggle with, even I still struggle with this. Trying to work out what it is that I would actually classify myself as.
You gave yourself made up.
I'm an art professional.
Well, I met with a career coach and author yesterday, and he's a work philosopher. So, you know, you make up your own job titles that reflect who you are rather than these sort of structured kind of ones. So you're what do we call it yourself, Miss Peggy? An art professional. Yeah, when people say, what do you do? I'm an art professional.
But that's what I used to when I was doing the front of house work, the viewing assistant work, and every time you come back into the country, into the UK from any of the trips I've done in sort of continental Europe, I'd have to fill in a passenger card thing for arriving back in the UK, because I'm not a UK passport holder, so I had to go through the process every time as I was arriving, and they ask you what your occupation is, and I just got into the habit of writing I'm an auction assistant. I just thought it was easier than viewing assistant didn't really mean anything. Front of house assistant, not really either. And it's like, well, I work in an auction house, I'm helping out there, so I'm an auction assistant.
But art professional's more to them.
More to the point now.
So, okay, going back to the main reasons that you made a change is, one, you had a passion for travel and you knew that you'd been putting it off. And the other thing we were talking about, was it in the cafe or on the walk, was there seemed to be limited opportunity. You wanted to marry more your passions and your interests.
And
what happened? Why couldn't you do that at home?
In New Zealand, I tried. Like, my initial intention when I finished university was to pursue a career in the arts, to work.
Because you've got an art history degree as well as a mathematics degree.
That's quite right.
That's
just the brain.
Whole brain girls. Professional.
I guess, like, for me, maths was always something I was good at, and art history was something I was really interested in.
Right.
So that was kind of why I stuck it out and did both. I took an extra year at university to do both, so I thought, why not? So when I got to the end of it, I was like, well, I really would love to be doing something in the arts. But I think also what limited me was that I was never really 100% convinced on what that was that I wanted to be doing in the arts. Did I want to be a curator? Did I want to be, there's just so many different aspects that I hadn't really fully understood or explored. But, you know, I was applying at Te Papa and at City Gallery and at Creative New Zealand. I thought, well, I could try a government job angle in the arts, you know, Creative New Zealand, Ministry of Culture and Heritage. But they're just
the jobs there are so few and far between, and the people that have them, who are all usually very, you know, highly skilled and have been around for a while and are well respected in that sector, being as small as it is, they'll, you know, they'll hold on to their jobs, fair enough. And so there's sort of limited opportunity unless you can afford to be a voluntary worker and really put in the groundwork. But I didn't really want to be doing it and couldn't really see how I could afford to do, to dedicate my time to doing voluntary work here, there and everywhere, just to get that foot in the door. Exactly, I had a student loan. So I kind of put it on the back burner and went for a job that I could get. And then I could also get lots of other skills and experience from that could later on apply. And I still sort of kept it a hand and, you know, going to exhibition openings and keeping in with my contact that I had and all of that, which was really good and really beneficial.
Not quite enough,
no.
There's still a hunger, was there, to sort of be more actively involved in the arts.
There was, definitely. Yeah. And so when I came over here, I sort of thought, well, it's a much, much bigger place with so many more places that I could work. So I thought that I would...
So many more positions potentially available.
So I thought, well, I set myself a limit, though, I did, because I was also conscious of having enough money to survive while I was here, and so I said that I'm going to spend 2 months solidly looking for only arts jobs, because I felt if I split my time between, well, I'll look at arts jobs and I'll apply for some, you know, non-arts jobs and cover all my bases, I thought if I don't just dedicate myself to just focusing on one thing, then I'm not going to get anywhere. And I might end up with something I really don't want to be doing. So I said, but if 2 months comes and goes and I still haven't got anything, then I will widen my search.
when did you get your job then?
I actually got my job about 2 weeks before my 2 month plan.
Yeah. So 6 weeks into the 8 week plan.
Yeah.
Now writing finished, and it was a part time job initially. And it led to more.
It was a casual job, but when I started it, they gave me full time hours.
Right.
But there was no job security in it, because it was the nature of it being a casual contract meant that 1 week it might be full time, but the following week it might not be. But they were really good about sort of giving us like a monthly timetable, so I'd know a month in advance how many shifts I would have as a minimum for that month, so I could work out, have I got enough work to pay my rent.
Hand to mouth for a little while?
It was. For my first year of being here, I only did one trip overseas, over to Europe, and because I just couldn't really afford it. But so that was okay, because I sort of like explored the UK, which I never planned really to do.
You also said, though, even now that you're full-time, it's not exactly the money that's keeping you here.
No, it's definitely not the money that's keeping me here.
Yeah.
I'm definitely earning a lot more now than I was.
Yeah.
But like compared to my flatmate who works in the IT industry, I'm earning more, minuscule amount.
Just something amount, maybe.
Yeah, probably more like a third or fourth of the amount.
So what's keeping you here?
The job, actually, is keeping me here.
Yeah.
Not the money I'm earning, but the job and the people.
Yeah.
And the company, actually. Didn't expect to sort of fall into the auction business, but I'm really loving it. I was sort of, you know, open to any kind of art area, whether that be a museum or an art gallery or an auction house or an administrative organisation for arts funding or something. And it just happened that I fell into this. And with the casual job when I started, I gave that about 6 months, and then I started seriously looking for something full-time and permanent, both within the company and outside of the company.
Right.
But it took another year for me to find something.
Okay. You're part-time here, and it took a year to find something, and you cushioned it wide, and then you came back, and still something came back here in Christie. Because you saw it on the internal website, or someone told you that too?
It's so complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so when a
quick version.
When I started as the casual labour, then what happened was, in December of last year, I got a phone call from the HR department who said, we've just
found out we've got a role coming up that we need someone for. It's only a 3-month contract, but it's full time for the 3 months, and it's working in our strategy department. They're looking for a data analyst, and I remember seeing your CV.
Submitted so many times for so many other roles.
Yeah.
I remember seeing on your CV that you used to work for Statistics New Zealand, so we thought maybe you'd be interested in coming in for an interview. So I did, and they offered me the job, which turned into a 4-month contract.
So did they not even know you even were here part-time?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, so that Statistics New Zealand job, which is, you know, drawing on the mathematical skills that you could do, led you then to also be able to learn that what you can do with what you love.
Which was really cool. And so that was that when they finally offered it to me, they offered it to me as a 4-month contract.
Right.
Which they then renewed closer to the end of 4 months into another 3 months, and then they renewed it again, and that's turned into a 9-month stint. But then they weren't able to renew it anymore due to a whole lot of different factors going on. And so I was sort of faced again with either having to go back to doing the casual viewing work, which I'd maintained my contacts with, because that was in our other sale room site, and they were, you know, they were looking for people, so I could have if I wanted to, but I felt like that would be such a backward step.
Yeah.
So I was really determined to find something, and then I saw through our company, and actually had recommended to me by the head of HR. She said that she would be really interested to see me apply for this other role, and so I thought more about it, and I thought actually it sounds really interesting, so I applied. I had 2 interviews for it, and they offered me the role, and so I've now been in this job for 2 months, and I love it. It's you know, it's more responsibility, builds on my skills. I'm now responsible for looking after people as well as myself, you know, as well as my own work.
So it's career progression.
Yeah, it is. And it's great. And one thing that the previous role I was doing in strategy really made me realise was that, and actually even my last few months working as a viewing assistant, was that the career path I wanted to take in the arts was an arts management side of things. So the behind the scenes, the back of house, the how in terms of an auction house, how the auction house runs, rather than being one of the specialists who's an expert on you know, on impressionist art or on antique vases or something. Like while I find it interesting, I could never really tell you which area I would want to be specialised in.
So you might come back to that, Papa. Well, just in terms of what gave you the, when you were back in New Zealand, and also just sort of being able to survive all that lot of uncertainty and employment insecurity, I suppose, because it's sort of part-time work, a few hours here, a few hours there, 3-month contract there, this and that. Rent's not part-time, it's consistent. Living costs are consistent. She's grimacing. So, 2 things then. What gave you the confidence and courage to actually pick up and leave home and come to a whole new city that you never lived in before? And then, and also then what sort of gave you the confidence and courage to keep sort of with this whole insecurity?
I think what gave me the confidence to leave was my family, I would have to say.
Mm-hmm.
My mum in particular, incredibly, incredibly supportive and incredibly encouraging, and all of my family, as much as they didn't want me to leave, were all like, you know, you can do this and just go and try it. And they were really, really encouraging of the fact that, you know, if you don't try it, you'll always regret it. And if you try it and it doesn't work, then you haven't lost anything, at least you know you've tried it.
Yeah.
And so I think it was that confidence, you know, that encouragement from all of my family that really gave me the push to think, well, yeah, you know,
I think
what have I got to do? I think I can do this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm intelligent, and I've had a lot of things happen in my life, and I've got through them, so why can't I do this?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think from that point of view, that was sort of what gave me the courage to do it.
Yeah.
And so I came over here and gave myself, initially I was like, if I can survive 6 months, then I feel like I've given it a good try. I've heard people, horror stories of people who lasted a week or lasted 3 months and then went home, but I thought to really get to know a place and to get comfortable with it, you need to give it at least 6 months because otherwise you're not really giving it a try.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, like, if I can get to 6 months, that's great. If I hate it at the end of 6 months, then I've given it 6 months and that's great. Now it's been 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So good. And I've got friends that came over after me who've already gone home, and I'm still here.
What's the difference then? Why do they give up?
Some of them it's been job dissatisfaction, missing family.
Okay.
They came with a set plan of what they wanted to achieve. They've achieved it, so they've gone home.
Okay.
They just don't feel like it's where they want to be anymore.
Yeah.
And I had friends that came over and they had a 2-year visa like mine with the option to extend it, and they just decided that they were enjoying it but they were ready to go home.
Mm-hmm.
The castles of Europe were all starting to look the same to them because they'd been all the ones they wanted to see.
Right, and they were more on a sightseeing.
Yeah, but even from the work point of view, I think for them as well, that sort of most people that I've encountered,
were they in your passion? Yeah. Like what kind of things?
One friend was an accountant, and she was a really big fan of accounting.
Passionate about her accounting. I guess. All right.
And she took the opportunity actually to branch out because, as I say over here with the whole pigeonholing thing, she was advised that you had to be really careful about what choice you made, whether you went down the financial accounting side of things or actually working within a company as a company accountant kind of thing. And once you chose one, you couldn't, if you were over here, you couldn't cross over, was what she was sort of told. So
like the canine.
So she gave that some careful thought and ended up deciding to do the company accounting side of things, which she hadn't really done before because she'd worked for a big financial companies in New Zealand. And I think now that she's gone back, that's what she wants to continue with, but she's got more of an idea now of like the size of the companies she'd like to do it for and what sort of work she wants to do, and I think she got a lot out of it. And
that's only like you can help clarify what you want to do because you're exposed to things you haven't really been exposed to before.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm sure when you're in New Zealand you probably weren't searching for jobs at Dunbar Times.
Quite a couple of times.
Oh, did you?
But not in the same way, no.
No. So, and in terms of just keeping up with that sort of intermittent job security, what kept you going there? Was it just, so close to the getting
around? I kind of did. I felt like each month I was getting enough to not need to get a second job. It wasn't enough to be travelling all over the world with or anything, but it was enough to keep me comfortable to be able to pay my rent and enjoy a drink out with friends once every few weeks or whatever. Like, it was enough to keep me happy in London, albeit on a very basic level. Like, I wasn't going out and doing big shopping sprees or anything. And I was cautious with going out for dinners and things about not spending too much. But my employers at the time knew my situation and knew that I didn't have anything to fall back on. I didn't have family I could stay with if I suddenly couldn't pay the rent, and I didn't really have anyone here, and I really was relying on that work. And so they knew that
I'd been an asset for you.
I guess it could have, but also I think they also acknowledged that I was good at what I did, so they would often, and when they had extra work, I was quite often one of the people that would always put my hand up and voluntarily say, yes, I'll work that weekend day. I'm happy to do that. And so they knew that I was reliable in that way, and so they were constantly giving me the work. And I think that's what kept me going, was that I had a really good rapport with the people that employed me, and so I stuck it out in the hope that something would happen. I basically did get really hard at times, and there were times when I was just like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'd go to work and I'd be like, I just had a really great day, and I got to talk to all these strange people I would never have talked to in any other situation, or I got to see this really crazy thing, or I sat in an auction and I
did on behalf of someone else while they were on the telephone talking to me, and I spent, you know, £10,000 of their money for them. You know, and you kind of think, oh wow, that was really, yeah, that was a really cool day.
Yeah.
And so I'd be like, that was okay. And and I just maintained a sort of positive, you know, when I got a rejection from an interview or whatever, I'd just be like, okay, well, I obviously wasn't meant to get that job.
Right.
And
it's a bit of a philosophical view. Yeah,
I try, I feel, if you don't laugh, you cry. So,
so
I was, you know, I tried to be as positive as I could and sort of look at it from that aspect that, you know, obviously, as much as I thought I wanted that job, maybe I didn't want it as much as I thought.
Mm.
Maybe it wasn't the right job for me, and, and a better one will come along, and as it turns out, it did.
Yeah.
And I look back at some of the jobs that I know I was, like, second, you know, the finalist for, but
You didn't get
it. No, I just think that they probably weren't the right job for me now when I look at it.
Yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed it, but not as much as maybe as the job I'm doing now.
Right. There's a little bit of divine providence at hand, you think?
Yeah. I don't know. I think
The mathematician in me would say, well, there are rational laws at play, but the hopeful person thinks, okay, yeah, it all worked out for your high school at the end.
Yeah.
And you just kept the faith.
Exactly.
So, what advice would you give to other people contemplating a change? You know, picking up and leaving their home base.
It's a very scary thing to do.
Yeah.
But well worth it. If you genuinely give it a go, like if you come over here, if you leave with an open mind and willing to take the opportunities that are given to you, because like with my first job, you know, I was in a way overqualified to be doing it. It really was a student job in some sense of the word, you know, because of its sort of casual nature. And a lot when I first started as well, before they sort of started giving me extra responsibility, it was, you know, it was standing in a room, and if there weren't clients in there, it was standing in a room with some other person and basically just having a gossip and talking about things. And it really was the sort of job that'd be ideal if you were a student, but it got to a point where I was like, I need to be using my brain. But also, it was an amazing foot in the door.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't accepted it, you know, where would I be now? Because there were no other people calling out for interviews at the time. And actually, since I got that job, when I then was applying for other jobs, I know there were a few places that I had interviews at that I'm pretty sure I probably only had the interview because they saw the name of the company on my CV that I was working there. It wasn't so much the job I was doing or the experience, but
The brand.
It was good exposure, because then I was like out there meeting other people in other roles and other companies. I think there's nothing wrong with starting at the bottom end, and I think a good example is me having gone from that entry level kind of role in the company, and now I'm sort of low level management of people. The CEO of this company started out as a porter in the company, which is, you know, the guy that carried the pictures around the room. Now he's the CEO. It's possible to start somewhere and work your way up.
Yeah.
If it's something that you really are passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's about just taking the opportunities, I think, when they come to you. And
so that would be one of the main bits of advice you'd say for people, is to not, you know, look at the opportunities that are available to you.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, the fact that it sounds like what you're saying, not just the fact that there's a small entry level job that may lead to something, but the fact that if you take your bigger skills offshore, that they're, you know, don't look at what you're leaving behind necessarily, which might be family and friends too much, but focus on what you're trying to achieve and what you're there for.
Think so. Like my friend that I live with, I had a conversation with her about this, whether she was someone that was pursuing her passion over here.
Yeah.
And she kind of said, well, that wasn't really what she came over here for. She's working in the industry she loves, and she's doing a job she really enjoys, and she's getting amazing opportunities for personal development and job development that she said she probably wouldn't be getting in New Zealand. But she said that she came over here to earn a good wage
better than in New Zealand than she was earning in New Zealand.
So that was the driving force.
Yeah, but also to travel, and for her, that's been her main focus. And she has done an amazing amount of travel since she got here, but that was why she came, which was completely different for me. And there were moments when, because we were living in the same house, and I was sort of struggling each month to sort of make sure I had enough money to pay the rent, and I knew that she wasn't even, if I said to her that month, oh, can I pay you a bit late, she would have been able to cover all the rent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd be saying, oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
But then I was like, but I didn't come over here to earn the money like she was and travel in the same way that she is. Like, in a way, the experience I've had and the money that I'm earning makes me appreciate more when I do travel.
Yeah.
It's such a treat. And
woohoo job.
But I came over here because I wanted to see if I could, if I could do it. And
that's satisfying in itself as well.
Yeah.
And I guess, and if you project to 5 years forward, where do you see yourself potentially, do you see yourself somewhere in the higher echelon of Christie's? Just imagine that you don't have a barrier to staying here in the country.
I guess so. I don't know. I enjoy working for this company and the people that I work with. And there's definitely jobs that I could see myself doing in this company that are higher up, I guess, ultimately. And so I think if things did progress and they did go well, then I could see myself doing that.
Because if you could live your passion and pay the bills more easily, as you say, double woohoo.
What was it that I said to my mum recently? I said, well, not recently, but a while back, I was like, if I could pick up Christie's and move it to New Zealand, I'd be home in a heartbeat. I do still miss home, and I think that's another bit of advice for people that are thinking of doing something like this. Is you do have to give it, as I said earlier, you do have to give it a chance.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still have moments where I'll be walking down the street and just be like, what am I doing here? The city is driving me mental. Why do I live here? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's given me a great appreciation for how fantastic New Zealand is. And ultimately, that is where I want to be one day.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow, but further down the line, I definitely want to go home and live back in New Zealand. But for now, this works for me. And really enjoying the experience.
Could you see yourself going back to statistics in New Zealand?
No, probably not.
So you have to find the next when you go back, the next place that's going to heal you, or it might be a new life experience you might be settling into. But if you were making a change again, what would you do the same or do differently?
It's a really hard one. I think most of the things that I did, I'd probably do again.
Maybe earlier?
Yeah, maybe a little bit earlier, but then maybe not, no.
Being sort of more mature at 26.
And I think having some work experience behind you makes a difference.
Right.
So I couldn't imagine having come sort of fresh from university, trying to find my first job, I don't think would have worked at all.
I might get some advice just for people that think I'm going to do my OE, is maybe think, well, I'll get 2 years work experience under your belt and you probably come into a better job.
I think it's depending on what you want to do your OE for. If you're coming over because you want work experience, I definitely think it's better to have had some in New Zealand first in your career, in your chosen field of expertise or interest, if that's what you're wanting to do over here. I don't know. And I think it's nice as well to have other people around that you know, like, I think for me, having had 2 or 3 people from back home that I knew back home come at a similar time, so I have a support network of people who know what I'm going through and who understand when I'm feeling homesick, that sort of people, but then also being open to making new friends and really experiencing the place that you're living. Like, I've made some amazing connections here with people who will be friends with me for the rest of my life. I know that just as close with me as my friends from back home are.
Yeah.
and not limiting yourself to just associating with the people in your own, from your own community within the city that you live in.
Comes back to sort of open-mindedness and embrace the place you move to.
Yeah.
So what five things would represent your old life?
Sounds such a hard question.
Yeah. Might be objects, might be feelings, you know, part of it, the catalyst for moving forward. The old you're leaving behind that you just go to the new.
Yeah, well, just my old life was. I was doing a job for, basically for the money I was earning, so mm-hmm. for money, mm-hmm. and my family and friends would have been mm-hmm. a big focus of my life before, and.
Yeah.
Because I still think essentially there's a lot that's the same with me. It's more internal, it's different.
Okay, so the internal.
So like in terms of now, you know, I'm more confident mm-hmm. and I know myself a lot better than I think I did before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so more confident, more self aware.
Much more confident. Because
I have a comfort zone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Much less afraid to speak up in a crowd than I ever was before.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, and I'm happy I'm doing something for me.
Yeah.
That I'm really enjoying and getting amazing opportunities from.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, family and friends still come into it as part of mm-hmm. who I am and mm-hmm. where I'm at now, but in a different way
mm-hmm.
to the way it was before.
Well, that's pretty big, if, you know, being happy, doing something that's for you, it feels more you, and it gives you amazing opportunities, and, you know, the whole confidence, self-awareness, and growth, I guess. Personal growth and professional growth. And one other thing you haven't sort of, we haven't really discussed before, but if you were giving people, if you were a career advisor and you were giving people that one piece of advice that was going to set them up, what would you say?
I would say I think I would just say go for it. You know, mm-hmm. go for your follow your passion. It's what my mother always told me.
Yeah.
Even my dad told me that.
Yeah. Right.
Follow your passion. And yeah, like don't worry so much about how it's going to work.
Right.
But you know, go with the flow.
Yeah.
It sounds really cheesy, but it is actually kind of true.
Yeah. Which is frustrating, but not very logical, is it? You know, go with the flow.
But as I say, with me, you know, I mean, it was when I didn't get a job, I was like, you know, be disappointed, yes, but sort of think about it logically and think, well, obviously it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try mm-hmm. something else. You know, there'll be something else out there that is. And I think that has ultimately led to the success, rather than just sort of getting drowned in the, why didn't they want me,
what's going on? What people do in the first setback, they do start to think they're worthless.
And also, I mean, even like the money side of it, it's like, yes, sometimes I sit there and think, oh, it would be nice if I was earning more money, but, but you know, you've got to weigh it up with the other things, and you've just got to think, well, it is what it is, and mm-hmm. make the most of what you've got, and, you know, I'm doing this thing that I really want to be doing, so that's really got to be the thing I focus on, and if I end up earning more money later, then great, if I don't, then, well, you know, I'll just deal with it.
I'll handle it. So, okay, and the last thing before we wind up today, and I'm going to take your photo, is, and it's probably embedded in all the things we've already talked about, All the Kiwis that come to New Zealand hoping to pursue their passion, if there's another bit of advice you can give people about working and living in London itself, and you've talked about, you know, be open to all your opportunities and get around the crowd and follow your passion. Is there anything else that you think makes a big difference to coming here?
finding a centrally located place to live.
Yeah, yeah. So quickly, transport. Yeah.
Get to know your city. Get to know your city, definitely. Yeah. It's amazing when I think about what the sort of places that I've been looking at when I first arrived, not having a clue about London. And then after 6 months of living here, looking for a new place to live and realising why had I ever contemplated living in that other place that I'd been taken to 6 months earlier, because there's no way that that makes sense to live there, or that it's, you know, so far away, or it's not a very nice area, or whatever. Like, take advice from other people that you that you meet about where to live, but location, I think, is really key.
Location. Yeah.
To making life a lot easier.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I think that's definitely key. And sort of surrounding yourself with people that you're
on your team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether that be people you knew before or people you've met here.
Yeah. So
get yourself a network.
Yeah.
A network of friends.
Or in the careers here, the tribe. Your tribe. You're like-minded souls.
Yeah.
So, cool. Now we're going to take a photo. Just thank you for that.